Good evening. If you'll be turning in your Bibles to the book of Judges, we'll be spending our time, most all of our time there in the book of Judges here in a few minutes. I was telling David beforehand that, and while I'm thankful for the opportunity, I do wonder if perhaps the elders decided to test the faithfulness of the congregation. That, you know, the afternoon of the Masters, they would have me preach just to see, you know, give you all two reasons not to show up. But we have a very good number, and we're glad that you've come out with us to worship and study a portion of God's Word. For whatever was written in earlier times was written for our instruction, so that through perseverance and the encouragement of the Scriptures, we might have hope. Romans chapter 15, verse 4, Paul is telling, and this is a verse that we often talk about the Old Testament. And what I'm wanting to do this evening is to look at, and this is actually, I'll admit, you know, there's several verses that, you know, we all have that we kind of like that, I don't know if your favorite is the right term, but that we kind of like, and this is one that I particularly find interesting, because what it means to me is that everything that's written, that has been written to us for a reason. That this, all Scripture is given to us for a reason. And in particular, the things that are in the Old Testament are given to us for a very good reason. God doesn't waste I believe I've used this term before or phrase before, but, you know, God didn't waste any words when he came up with the Scriptures. So from that standpoint, is the thing that I kind of like about this verse is that, and maybe this is just me and another example of how I'm a little different, but to me, this means that there's a challenge here from, if I'm reading something in the Old Testament that maybe I look at and go, wow, that doesn't really make any sense. Well, you know what? That means I need to spend some time and figure it out. So what I want to do this evening is to look at a particular story from the book of Judges that maybe it's one that we don't study as much because it's something that we don't really think makes a whole lot of sense to us when we first read through it. Maybe we're reading through it in our daily Bible readings through the year. We get to Judges. We get all the way to the end of the Judges. And some of y'all will now know where I'm going with this. We get to these two stories at the end of the Judges that just seem sort of odd. It wasn't actually until I was a good bit older because, you know, we study the Judges a lot, being raised at a church. We study the Judges a lot. And you study all the time about, you know, the cycle of the Judges and all these great men, Gideon and the fleece and you know, Jephthah and his vow and Samson. You know, as a little boy, everybody loves reading about Samson. It wasn't until I was a good bit older that I realized that, you know, after Samson doesn't come Ruth. There's actually a little bit more there. And we're going to study tonight from Judges 17 and 18. So this is the first of the two stories. We'll save the other one for another time. But regarding Micah, and a story about Micah and his idols. But before we go into this, just as a little bit of a reminder to us of what's going on in the period of the Judges, and I think this is important for us to be able to help us remember, maybe once we read through this story together, what this story is all about and how this applies to the overall picture of the book of Judges. But the book of Judges is actually, It's a simple progression that keeps recurring over and over and over again. Judges comes after the book of Joshua, and Joshua has come and led the people into the conquest of the land of Canaan. They've taken over the land. They've taken possession of the land, and the land has been divided up amongst the 12 tribes. And as a result, you know, we get then, and Joshua dies, gives them this charge that they need to remain faithful to the Lord. But then what we see in the book of Judges is the fact that that doesn't stick, for lack of a better way of putting it. That the people don't remain faithful to the Lord, and that a generation arises after Joshua and the men, the elders who were with Joshua, there arises another generation that doesn't know God. And what we see throughout the book of Judges is this cycle of the people of Israel falling away from God, God punishing them, bringing in other nations to conquer them, to raid them, to punish them physically for their sin. And then the children of Israel, realizing that they've sinned, crying out to God, God raising up a judge who comes and delivers them, and then there's a period of peace after that judge comes and brings the deliverance until the judge is gone, and then we see the people fall right back into sin pretty much just immediately after the judge's time period ends. And that happens several times throughout the book. And those are the stories that we're most familiar with. But then when we get to the end of the book, we get these, again, a couple of stories here that are just sort of thrown in there on the end. And quite frankly, if you're reading through the book at first glance, you look at them and you go, well, what on earth is this about? And we're going to begin reading here, and we're actually going to read the entirety of chapter 17 and 18 to read about Micah and the events that go on with him. And we're going to read this story, and then we're going to go back and make a couple of points from the story and a few applications, and then the lesson will be yours. Now, Judges 17, verse 1, and by the way, I read out of the New American Standard Version. Now, there was a man of the hill country of Ephraim whose name was Micah. He said to his mother, the 1,100 pieces of silver which were taken from you, about which you uttered a curse in my hearing, behold, the silver is with me, I took it. And his mother said, blessed be my son by the Lord. He then returned the 1,100 pieces of silver to his mother, and his mother said, I wholly dedicate the silver from my hand to the Lord for my son, to make a graven image and a molten image. Now therefore I will return them to you. So when he returned the silver to his mother, his mother took 200 pieces of silver and gave them to the silversmith, who made them into a graven image and a molten image, and they were in the house of Micah. And the man Micah had a shrine, and he made an ephod and household idols, and consecrated one of his sons that he might become his priest. In those days there was no king in Israel. Every man did what was right in his own eyes. Now there was a young man from Bethlehem in Judea of the family of Judah, who was a Levite, and he was staying there. Then the man departed from the city, from Bethlehem in Judah, to stay wherever he might find a place. And as he made his journey, he came to the hill country of Ephraim, to the house of Micah. Micah said to him, where do you come from? And he said to him, I am a Levite from Bethlehem in Judea, and I am going to stay wherever I might find a place. Micah then said to him, dwell with me and be a father and a priest to me, and I will give you 10 pieces of silver a year and a suit of clothes and your maintenance. So the Levite went in. The Levite agreed to live with a man, and the young man became to him like one of his sons. So Micah consecrated the Levite, and the young man became his priest and lived in the house of Micah. Then Micah said, now I know that the Lord will prosper me, seeing that I have a Levite as priest. In those days there was no king of Israel, and in those days the tribe of the Danites was seeking an inheritance for themselves to live in. For until that day, an inheritance had not been allotted to them as a possession among the tribes of Israel. So the sons of Dan sent from their family five men out of their whole number, valiant men from Zor and from Eshtal, to spy out the land and to search it. And they said to them, go, search the land. And they came to the hill country of Ephraim, to the house of Micah, and lodged there. When they were near the house of Micah, they recognized the voice of the young man, the Levite, and they turned aside there and said to him, who brought you here, and what are you doing in this place, and what do you have here? And he said to him, thus and so has Micah done to me, and he has hired me, and I have become his priest. They said to him, inquire of God, please, that we may know whether our way on which we are going will be prosperous. The priest said to him, go in peace. Your way in which you are going has the Lord's approval. Then the five men departed and came to Laish, and saw the people who were in it living in security, after the manner of the Sidonians, quiet and secure, for there was no ruler humiliating them for anything in the land. And they were far from the Sidonians and had no dealings with anyone. When they came back to their brothers at Zor and Eshtol, their brothers said to them, "What do you report?" And they said, "Arise and let us go up against them, for we have seen the land, and behold, it is good, very good. And will you sit still? Do not delay to go to enter, to possess the land. When you enter, you will come to a secure people with a spacious land, for God has given it into your hand, a place where there is no lack of anything that is on the earth." Then from the family of the Danites, from Zor and from Eshtol, 600 men armed with weapons of war set out. They went up and camped at Kirith Jearim in Judea. Therefore they called that place Menahah Dan to this day. Behold, it is west of Kirith Jearim. They passed from there to the hill country of Ephraim and came to the house of Micah. Then the five men who went to spy out the country of Laish said to their kinsmen, "Do you know that there are in this houses an ephod and household idols and a graven image and a molten image? Now therefore consider what you should do." They turned aside there and came to the house of the young man, the Levite, to the house of Micah, and asked him of his welfare. The 600 men armed with their weapons of war who were of the sons of Dan stood by the entrance of the gate. Now the five men who went out to spy out the land went up and entered there and took the graven image and the ephod and the household idols and the molten image, while the priest stood by the entrance of the gate with the 600 men armed with weapons of war. When these went into Micah's house and took the graven image and the ephod and the household idols and the molten image, the priest said to them, "What are you doing?" They said to him, "Be silent. Put your hand over your mouth and come with us, and be to us a father and a priest. Is it better for you to be a priest to the house of one man, or to be priest to a tribe and a family in Israel?" The priest's heart was glad, and he took the ephod and the household idols and the graven image and went among the people. Then they turned and departed and put the little ones and the livestock and the valuables in front of them. When they had gone some distance from the house of Micah, the men who were in the houses near Micah's house assembled and overtook the sons of Dan. They cried to the sons of Dan, who turned around and said to Micah, "What is the matter with you that you have assembled together? He said, "You have taken away my gods, which I made, and the priest, and have gone away, and what do I have besides? So how can you say to me, 'What is the matter with you?'" The sons of Dan said to him, "Do not let your voice be heard among us, or else fierce men will fall upon you, and you will lose your life with the lives of your household." So the sons of Dan went on their way, and when Micah saw that they were too strong for him, he turned and went back to his house. Then they took what Micah had made and the priest who had belonged to him and came to Laish, to a people quiet and secure, and struck them with the edge of the sword, and they burned the city with fire. And there was no one to deliver them, because it was far from Sidon, and they had no dealings with anyone. And it was in the valley which is near Beth Rehob, and they rebuilt the city and lived in it. They called the name of the city Dan, after the name of Dan their father, who was born in Israel. However, the name of the city formerly was Laish. The sons of Dan set up for themselves the graven image, and Jonathan, the son of Gershom, the son of Manasseh, he and his sons were priests of the tribe of the Danites until the day of the captivity of the land. So they set up for themselves Micah's graven image, which he had made all the time that the house of God was at Shiloh. So this is a fairly lengthy reading going through here, but I wanted to make sure that this story was firmly in our mind. And the first point that I'd like to make is, this is a fairly odd little story in many respects here at the end of the book of Judges. So what is the point of this? And I think the most simple point that we can make from this is that, and from the standpoint of why is this included? If God doesn't waste what he has written, why does he include this one story here at the end of the book of Judges about really a bunch of wicked people? there's nothing redeeming about any of this. This is just sin. And I think that's the point. I think the point of this, if you want to get real simple with this, but I think there's some more points that we can make as well, is to show the level of wickedness that was occurring during the time of the judges. One thing that's important to point out about this story is the story doesn't, from a chronological standpoint, doesn't necessarily come after the events of the life of Samson. In fact, more than likely, this story, many who have studied this figure that this probably occurs much, much earlier. In fact, some translations and when it's talking about Jonathan here, the New American Standard version refers to him, the son of Manasseh. Some of the translations will also translate that the son of Moses, so that there's the possibility that this could be a this Levite who's under discussion here could be a descendant of Moses. His son Gershon was one of Moses' sons, and you know, maybe a grandson or great-grandson of Moses. So it's a fairly recent time period after they've come into the land. You can also tell this by the fact that the tribe of Dan still hasn't found their possession within the land. And if you go back to the end of the book of Joshua and early in the book of Judges, you'll see that you know the people of Dan are one of the last tribes to sort of find their place, and they had a lot of trouble driving out the inhabitants of the land, but they do eventually get their possession there near Judah by the coast. So more than likely, this is occurring much, much earlier in the time period of the Judges. And in fact, the next story after this with the men of Gibeon, that definitely occurs much, much earlier when you see the characters that are involved in it. So these stories are not necessarily coming at the end of this time period. So it's really intended to show us the level of depravity that the people had gotten themselves into. And in particular, it's showing us the level of depravity in one particular aspect, and that is in relation to how they chose to worship God and the devolution, if you will, or the corruption of their worship of God at this time. And it starts right off from the beginning. One of the things that Deanne always finds the most interesting when we were talking about this, regarding this story, is the way that this entire story starts off. Back in 17, verse 1, there was a man of the hill country of Ephraim whose name was Micah. He said to his mother, "The 1,100 pieces of silver which were taken from you, about which you uttered a curse in my hearing, behold, the silver is with me. I took it." And his mother said, "Blessed be my son by the Lord." He then returned the 1,100 pieces of silver to his mother, and his mother said, "I wholly dedicate the silver from my hand to the Lord for my son to make a graven image and a molten image. Now, therefore, I will return them to you." You know, the thing that's amazing about this is how many things are wrong in such a short little package here. We start off with the son has stolen something from his mother, which would be a violation of one of the Ten Commandments, for which he should probably be put to death. But she's excited when he gives him back what she's stolen from him. And she's so excited that she's going to dedicate it to the Lord to make an idol, which would be a violation of a couple more of the Ten Commandments here. So, you know, we've completely lost sight. These people have completely lost sight of what it means to be pleasing to God. And again, this has all happened within a fairly short time of them coming up and coming into the land. It talks about the fact that he is, in verse 5, that he's got a shrine, an ephod, and household gods, and he sets up his priest to be, his son to be a priest. Again, how many more things can we do that are wrong? The children of Israel at this time, there was one place where they were supposed to worship and offer sacrifices to God, and that was at the tabernacle. They were to come and they were to bring their offerings to the priest there. The priests were to be the descendants of Aaron. You couldn't just make anyone a priest. Many years later, we see Jeremiah, the sin of Jeremiah is exactly this, that he sets up priests out of the people. Jeroboam. Later, the first king of the northern kingdom he makes the same mistake of perverting worship in the same ways. Here, this is already happening. Here within, you know, perhaps as few as a few hundred years after the death of Joshua, maybe even less time than that. And then, you know, not only does he do this, but then we have this Levite who comes on the scene. Now, the Levites were dedicated to serve in the worship of God. You know, the priest came from the tribe of Levi, the descendants of Aaron. Aaron was a Levite. And the rest of the tribe of Levi were set up. They were not given an inheritance, but they were given cities. And more importantly, they were set aside to care for the ark, to be teachers in the land, to be God's. They were redeemed by God as the firstborn, and were special to God amongst all the nation. And so of anyone, they should know the law. They should know how they're supposed to live and how what right and wrong is and how's the right way to worship God. But in the case of this Levite, the Levite falls right into the exact same sin that Micah is falling into. And he's doing it for what reason? Because he's getting paid. You know, at the end of the day, for money, 10 pieces of silver a year and a change of clothing and his, I guess, his daily living, he agrees, hey, you know what? Apparently he doesn't have a place to live. Sounds like a good idea to me. Make some money off of this. And so he goes along with his sin, just goes along with it, just like Micah. And you can see then later on when the men of Dan come and these spies take him and take the idols off with them, again, they're going along in this same sin. And you see the Levite, who is obviously interested in this only for the financial benefit, realizes, hey, I bet this is a better deal. I can be the priest for an entire tribe as opposed to just for this one man. This, I bet they'll pay me even more. So he goes along with it. So, you know, we see this corruption over and over again as it goes on in this lesson. So what's the lesson then, or what are some lessons then here for us? And I think there's two or three lessons that I think we can glean from this that are applicable to us today. First of all, worshiping God according to man's wisdom is not a new thing. You know, when we preach lessons and we talk about this a whole lot about, you know, and we'll talk about the fact that groups around here, maybe in town or in other places, that they'll set up these massive church buildings, not that having a large building in and of itself is any kind of a problem, but they'll build gymnasiums in it, and they'll have social outreach programs that none of which is authorized in the scriptures, and all of which, and then they'll teach the teachings of biblical authority get pushed aside so that they can make everybody feel good and make everybody happy and make life more convenient for you. My wife, with Easter coming up and the fact that, you know, certain places are putting on these big productions for Easter to try and get more people to come in. And she was talking about the fact that, you know, she finds it funny that the only time that many groups will cancel, the big time is, you know, people will show up to church services at Easter and at Christmas, but except for this past Christmas, because, you know, we had to cancel all of our church services because Christmas came on Sunday, the actual Christmas day, and we didn't want to make it inconvenient for anybody, so we would cancel church services. You know, we look at that and we lament that. Why in the world are people just trying to change God's word to say whatever they want to say? The reality is, this is nothing new. The Bible is replete with this throughout the pages of the Old Testament and the New Testament. We see examples of it in the New Testament. We see examples of it over and over and over again in the Old Testament. I've already referenced Jeroboam. We see examples of it throughout the prophets. Isaiah talks about it. Jeremiah talks about it. Ezekiel talks about it. Daniel talks about it. You know, all of these things, you know, it's a constant refrain of the corruption of the people and the willingness of the people of Israel to follow after their own devices and stop following after God. This, you know, we see this today. We should not be surprised when we see this today. Another lesson that we can learn from this, and it kind of goes hand in hand with that, is that just because others go along with it does not make it right. You know, I imagine that Micah felt, well, in fact, Micah even states at the end of chapter 17, then Micah said, "Now I know the Lord will prosper me, seeing as I have a Levite as priest." I imagine, you know, maybe somewhere in the back of his mind he thought, well, I wonder if what I'm doing is okay. But then when this Levite comes along and is willing to go along with it, you see here the example of Micah saying, obviously God approves of what I'm doing. I got somebody to go along with it, and it's a Levite. I mean, it's a genuine Levite. You know, here's a genuine person who went to school to learn all about the Bible, and he goes along with what I'm saying. Obviously, it must be right. He spent all this time. You know, and I've heard this from in trying to talk with other people. He's like, well, you know, my pastor said this, and I mean, he's a smart guy. He went to school and spent a whole lot of time learning about the Bible. So, you know, I really don't know a whole lot about the Bible, and I'm sure he's right. Just because we feel, you know, just because there's, you know, there is no such thing as strength in numbers when you're going against God's will. That just doesn't happen. And so we need to realize that in our own lives, is that just because a lot of people, and this can happen inside of a church like this, you know, just because certain people are saying that it's okay to do something doesn't necessarily mean that that's the case. And we need to be careful to make sure that whatever we're doing, we're following God's word. And lastly, and this really is kind of the overall theme of the book of Judges that we can glean from this, and it's brought out again and again in this story and in the next, is in verse 17, in chapter 17, verse 6, states, "In these days there was no king in Israel. Every man did what was right in his own eyes." You know, the thing that's interesting about this is stated as if this is just an accepted fact. The reality is that nothing could be further than from the truth. If anything, this is an indictment of the people. Because the reality is they did have a king. They very much had a king. And we know that from later in the period of the judges, at the end of the period of judges, Samuel comes to God when the people are asking for Samuel to appoint a king for them. And God tells Samuel in 1 Samuel 8 and verse 7, "The Lord said to Samuel, 'Obey the voice of the people and all that they say to you, for they have not rejected you, but they have rejected me from being king over them.'" The children of Israel very much had a king. They had the same king that we have. They have God as their judge. They had God as their king. They had God as their leader. And that's who God always has wanted to be the leader of his people, was himself. It wasn't any man. It wasn't King David or King Saul, even though King David was a man after God's own heart. That's not ultimately who God wanted his people following. God wanted his people following him. And what we see in us today is that's exactly who we're supposed to be following. Is we're supposed to be following after God. And when you take God out of the picture, and this is really the message of the book of Judges, is when you take God out of the picture, there is no limit to the depths of depravity that man will go to. You know, I picked this story because this story is a little less gruesome than the next story. But in the next story, you see just this story, we can look at it and go, wow, they've just so quickly and abundantly rejected worshiping God. In the next story of the men of Gibeon, you see that not only have they rejected the worship of God, but they've just rejected all manner of moral decency. I mean, the level of depravity that they've gone to is astounding and shocking to us. when we read it. And I'm sure shocking to them even when they recognized it. And so as a result, you know, but what does that indicate? That indicates that when we get God out of the picture, anything can happen. And so when we look around at our society today, what's the lesson for us? Why should we be surprised when people reject God, what limits they'll go to? We shouldn't. You know, I hear all the time, and I understand the point of this. You know, I just can't believe that people would do that. You know what? If there are no rules, then there are no rules. And if you take God out of the picture, there are no rules. And so, ultimately, we should not be surprised at anything that happens. Now what then, you know, is the application for us today? If we're going to be pleasing to God, we can't take God out of the picture. We have to remain faithful to what He's going to do, what He has commanded of us. These are the types of things that led to the suffering that the children of Israel went through. These types of sins, this kind of gives us a picture of the level of sin or the type of sin. Because earlier in the book of Judges, all it says is just that the people sinned. But it doesn't really give you any details as to what in the world that meant. This is trying to give us some more details. And so, you know, we need to realize that, you know, if we're going to be pleasing to God, we have to continue to follow after Him and do what He has commanded of us to do. Now, I realize this lesson is not one that is, you know, really geared towards bringing people to the gospel and discussing things like baptism and the steps necessary for salvation. But here at the close of every service, we want to always make sure that we extend an invitation to any who are here tonight or at any time who are in need of God's forgiveness, as we all are, but in particular of needing to render obedience to God through baptism. Or if you are here this evening and you've rendered obedience in the past, but you've fallen away from following after God, you've fallen back into the world, and you've been overcome in some sin, in particular of a public nature, that you need to ask for the prayers of the saints, or you have some need that you need to ask for the prayers of the saints from a spiritual standpoint. You know, we offer this opportunity for any who are here to come forward and make whatever your needs are known. And you can do that as we stand and sing.